How's that sound? Can you hear me? There. Okay, I can talk louder. Should I talk louder or is that
better? Yes.
More. She wants more. 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 Okay?
Yeah.
Sometime a few days ago, one of the quotes of Hazrat Inayat Khan in the Bowl of Saki was something like this. The person who understands the mystery of vibration knows the secret of life. And I'm just thinking how lucky we are. We're in the middle of the sea of vibration, the external, the manifest vibrations that are so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And we're concentrating on those. And then we get to sit down and concentrate on the internal vibrations, which are more subtle. And the more we concentrate, the more subtlety we see. And, you know, the slightest flinch inside, the waves give rise to a crescendo of pictures and thoughts and emotions. And someone today said to me that people are always looking for entertainment. You can't get more entertaining than that. Wow, what goes on in there? And it's so fascinating to see the way we create because we're in at a subtle realm, to understand how everything is conditioning everything, and what, you know, one little thought will give condition an avalanche of emotion, and vice versa. You know, we'll have an emotion and there'll be a cascade of thoughts. And so vibration, I thought, just listen to this. Tell me what happens. What happened?
It fades away.
It sure did. And that's the secret of the Buddha. That's the secret of life, that everything is vibratory in waves, and what rises fades away. So I want to talk about reactivity.
She was a plant. That was a plant. Your answer.
Who did answer? So that's the good news. So our reactivity arises, and it does. That's the way we're built. But it also fades away. And if we're attentive, we can watch it. We can feel it fade away and return to our natural state of ease and peace and contentedness. So these are the teachings, the most fundamental teachings of the Buddha, the first teachings he gave. And when he had his experience under the Bodhi tree and the first thing he said is, it was not until I understood how reactivity arises and how it passes away that I considered myself fully awake. So we get to practice that all day long. And if we don't think we are, well, we're not being attentive, because we're built to be reactive. A phenomena arises, and we will automatically either enjoy it or not enjoy it. And as soon as we enjoy it, if we're not attentive at that subtle moment to see that, we will want more. And if we don't like what's arising, you know, we're going to look for ways to work around it, or not admit it, or ignore it, or push it away. Yeah, I was going to say something, but it's gone. Okay, so... So really, these are the four tasks that the Buddha assigned us. It's his most fundamental teaching, and that is that we embrace life, as Ramat said this morning, as Shabda has said today. Whatever arises, we open to it and embrace it, and that includes our reactivity. And then we just let that reactivity be. That is, we don't try to push it away, but we don't get tangled up in it. We don't give it any credence. It just, and if we do that, just like this bell sound, it will pass away. And we see that, we see it dissolve. And we appreciate that, because that brings us back into our place of clarity, where there's no obstruction of contraction, no reactivity, no grasping, and no aversion, and no indifference. And that's our clear place that we touch also daily, many times in the day, but we don't give it credence, we don't appreciate it, we don't notice. And that's what I was saying earlier this morning, that this miraculous natural state of awareness that we dwell in, it's here all the time. And when it's not occluded by these poisons, Ramat, I think it was Patro Rinpoche's quote, the three poisons. And in those three poisons are the three virtues, because as soon as we notice that these reactivities are arising, we're in virtue, we're in awareness. We're where we want to be. And if we stay with them and we're open to them, just completely open, they fade away just like the sound of the bell. So it's pretty simple. We just have to do it. That's all. So we embrace life. We just let reactivity be. We see that it is dissolving, and then we actualize the path. That is, from this place of peacefulness and quiet, this is where our action comes from, in which we can act on behalf of all beings. And Shabda said that last night, I think. He said, you know, it's only from this place that we can be the bodhisattvas that we all aspire to be. That is, from this place of clarity and calm and contentedness, if we have any chance at all of being effective, to effectively help the world, it's going to be from this place. And I know we all aspire for that, and that it's so important to always bring all beings into our practice at all times. Because if we don't, someone recently called it the elephant in the Dharma room. If we're only working for our own thriving, our own life to thrive, we have to be, because we're all interconnected, it has to be that in all of our action, we're feeling our interconnections and our aspiration for all beings to also come to this place of contentedness and peace, to know open-heartedness, open-mindedness. The Stoic philosopher Seneca, it's about the time of Christ, said, calibrate your life for contentment. And they also called it untroubledness, the state of untroubledness. So, you know, we still, after all these years, think that something's wrong when things don't go the way we want them. But we're always getting things we don't want. And we're always not getting the things we want. It isn't wrong. It's the way life is. And so that's why the first truth of the four truths that the Buddha taught is that life is suffering. There is a lot of suffering. And we know the huge sufferings which are happening all over the planet, and which I know we all feel heartbroken. But even, you know, being in the wrong lane on the freeway, it's happening all the time. We're just not getting exactly what we want. Didn't get the plane on get the seat on the airplane, or our restaurant we went to was closed, you know. These are the sufferings of people in Marin and Sonoma. But it's all, it's not a mistake. We think we've done something wrong. We didn't play our cards right. But it's just the way it is. And that's why we keep, you know, everybody keeps saying we have to embrace whatever arises. And so that was the first, what's been come to be called the first noble truth. And I've been studying a lot of Stephen Batchelor's work, and he's an author and a scholar, and that he's really gone through the suttas and pulled out. The suttas have come down to us. First of all, they were put down on paper several hundred years after the Buddha died, and they were put down by people in a Vedic culture and in monastic cultures. And they put their spin on it, you can be sure. And so he's trying to pull out what he thinks the Buddha actually did teach that was different than the Vedas, and not couched to the monastics. So, for instance, the word noble in that context, generally he's speaking about the monastics. I mean, he wasn't, but the people who wrote it are. So Batchelor doesn't call it the noble truths. I mean, it's a beautiful word, but it also has connotated for the special people. So that's where we get this idea of nirvana being so, or going beyond being only for the special people who can sit in a monastery for, you know, 100 years. And according to his research, that was never what the Buddha meant by nirvana. He meant this clear state without greed and hatred and indifference. And that's all. that we have that access to nirvana all the time. You know, if you're running a monastery, it's good to, things happen in religions, you know, and you have to have a teacher, you have to stay there a long time or whatever, like only the Pope can talk to God. It's like that, you know, but the invitation is that to know that place inside of us of open-heartedness and open-mindedness and know it's ours and easy to access if we just pay attention. So this suffering will arise. And the other thing, of course, I think we all understand is it's not really those circumstances that are creating the suffering. They may be painful, but the suffering comes from resistance. That's how we create our suffering, when we can't open to it, when we're pushing it away or clinging or trying to deny it, denial. My partner is a Krishna devotee, and his teacher said, you can wake a sleeping man, but you cannot wake someone who is pretending to be asleep. So that's kind of the ignorance one, and it's all over the place. People who don't really want to know, won't really do the research to find out what's happening in our world and why it's happening, just taking it all at the level it's being spoon-fed to us by the media and the corporations. I mean, we have to do our due diligence and really uncover. So, let's see, where am I? Suffering, reactivity. The thing about embracing our reactivity, you say, well, I'm not going to embrace it. We don't embrace the thoughts and the pictures, the virtual mind, but the sensations, and all emotions have sensation. They're arising in our body and they're physical. And so we feel them. We don't think about them, and we don't feed the story. That's letting it be by not indulging in the storyline. But we do feel them. We otherwise it would be denial. We have to really open to what's arising in our body. And that's why, to me, this practice, what helps me the most in this practice we're doing is to really feel the difference between sensation and thoughts. And I try, this is really, for me, the key to my practice is to feel whatever is arising. That, to me, that's being present. That's what's really here. And to dismiss or ignore the thoughts and just let them, like clouds, or like this, just float by, you know. But stay with the sensations until they self-liberate, until they dissolve, just like this bell. They will self-liberate, and of course we're trained in our society not to understand that. We think if we have a desire, we have to go out there and get the object of the desire and have it, and then our desire will abate or subside. But the good news is, if you just feel your desire inside, it will dissolve. You don't have to get up and go out and get a cake box and come home and make a chocolate cake and all that work. you can just watch the desire rise and fall away. So when that falls away and you see that, then the thing is to appreciate the return to this state of contentedness. And then from that place, actualize this path of virtue, of flourishing for all beings. Out of this comes all understanding of what it is for all beings to flourish. And the more we cultivate this love, this place of contentedness, the more we, as Shabd was talking about the hand and the arm, well, it's not just the hand and the arm, it's our breath and our water and the animal corridors, and it's the trees and the roots. And the more we do this, surely, the more we love this planet that is like our hand. I guess I could just try this for a minute in case you don't believe me. And it's artificial, so it might not work. But let's just try a little experiment. If you'll find your breath, settle into your breath. And now I'm going to ask you to do what I just said we need not do, is I want you to think virtual reality here. I want you to create in your mind, bring up, conjure up pictures, words, memories of something that will bring into your body a sensation of reactivity, either a lot of desire or a lot of aversion or something that you feel really you don't want to know about. So I'd like you to try and generate some reactivity within yourself if you can. Maybe you have to think of a political person. Just do whatever brings something up for you. And if that happens, I'm sure there's plenty of people in here who don't have any reactivity at all, but in case you can find some, feel it. Find where you feel that in your body. Maybe a tightening in your stomach or in your throat, or your heart is faster, your breath is faster, your face is flushed, whatever sensation is with that emotion, feel it. And if you can do that, then begin to let go of the thoughts. Just ignore the thoughts and try to stay with the sensations. See what happens. Amen. So, did anything happen for anybody?
Mm-hmm. pleasant in the case of what I was conjuring up there.
If you can, a little louder, Kabir.
Okay, yes, I definitely had some sensations, and they were unpleasant in relation to what I conjured up. And they did fade, and I was actually interested in the change, because I hadn't, until they started to fade, I wasn't even so aware of exactly all of the places that were suddenly tight. That was interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it? Fascinating, really. Like, really fascinating. Thank you. Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter if no one else had. That's enough. Just that you experienced that. I mean, you'll never forget it, you know, and it's there now for you for the rest of your life. Because if you stay with those sensations, they fade away, and then the feeling's gone. Of course it's going to come back, and you have to do it again. So I don't have this idea of this place of enlightenment where you're never irritated again. I'm pretty sure, maybe, but for most of us, it's a lifelong practice of being attentive. And yeah. So Stephen Batchelor calls this practice, he's given it an acronym, ELSA, which I'll explain, but I just want to say, and he doesn't call it the Four Noble Truths. He calls it the Four Tasks, the four things that we have to do. So ELSA, E is embrace the reactivity. Let be the thoughts. See the reactivity, the emotions dissolving, and A, act from this place or actualize the path, or A, ELSA. Over and over again, because the minute you have those thoughts, those emotions are going to come back. And again, if you've become habituated to the subtleties of these contractions, you know, you'll catch them quicker. The quicker you catch them, of course, the easier it is to do this practice. If you catch them before they become cascades and crescendos and explosions and temper tantrums and whatever. I think that's all I have to say. Let's just close our eyes and sit for just a minute.
If you want to take any questions.
Sure, I'm on my.
Did you hear what I said?
Yes. No questions.
I asked Darvesh if she'd be willing to answer any questions.
I'll muddle my way through one. I'm sure it's been asked 100 times.
What?
I'm sure this has been asked 100 times, but it's still alive in unenlightened me. Where does righteous anger and trying to make changes fit in? Because when I think of contentment, I think of a person who's not trying to change things or fight things or make them better. I think of a person who's just content. So fierce compassion, righteous anger, the energy in that, where does that fit? That's going on a lot in my life right now, so it's up.
Well, I mean, only we can tell whether we are in a place of ease and open-heartedness and open-mindedness and peace. But I'm saying that's where the action should come from. And so, yes, wrathful compassion. I know the term, and the Tibetans use it like this: if a ball rolls out in a street and your child starts to run after it, you run after the child or you yell at the child to get out of the street. That's what they mean. They don't mean that you're righteous and you get to get angry. And, you know, what did Marcia Sam say? I'd like to see a peace demonstration.
I'd like to go to a peace demonstration where the demonstrators demonstrate peace.
So that's where it is. Does that help?
No,
not really.
It's just, it may be a redefining of contentment.
Yes.
Because I think of contentment as somebody not taking action. They're just content.
Yes, I think that that's your idea of contentment, but it's not necessarily what I'm talking about.
Can you say a little reframe contentment?
Yeah, no clinging, no grasping. No aversion. But no indifference.
Well, that's what
indifference is. Indifference is an obstacle. Ignorance. In Buddhism, it's called ignorance. No ignorance. That's what I said. Wake up. Do your due diligence. Read below the lines of Hollywood and the New York Times and all the megaphones of the corporate world, you know, you cannot be indifferent or ignorant either. But come from a place of peace where you're not charged up with emotions. Clarity, a clear place where you can reflect all that is without these waves of turbulence.
It's kind of the same word, but I think I look at it as being satisfied or just being content. Sometimes I think find the words, but satisfied is like the needs are met, you don't necessarily need anything, whereas content might be. Maybe they're the same word.
Well, I think that satisfied would connotate for you the same thing contentment does, but what I can say, and Shabda already quoted it once today, is from the Krishna talking to Arjuna, you know, do your best, but leave the fruits of your action up to me. So you act, but you're not acting with a neediness. You're not needing the results to be the way you want them.
I think there's a thing about complacency. Like people, I think people get confused around contentment and complacency.
Mm-hmm.
I think complacency is that is around that indifference.
Yeah.
So it's not that. And I think when we were talking about Elsa, that last A is act from that place.
Mm-hmm.
So you've done all the work to ease the storm that we all feel, so that then you can be more affected in the world.
Here, you can have the microphone. Thank you, yes, beautiful. Yeah.
There's also the contrast between reacting and responding.
Yes.
To a perceived need in the world.
Right.
If you're reacting out of your own emotional turmoil, you're not likely to be affected. Is what I'm hearing.
You can have the microphone. Thank you both. Yes. Perfect answers. Yes. Thank
and
you.
Contentment isn't passive. It's active. It's vital. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
There's some new data coming out of the NVC, nonviolent communication, that our IQ actually goes down.
Oh, sure.
Of course.
Oh, sure. It's a contraction. Completely. We're cutting off everything that we don't want. I mean, it's not an open state.
You're taking blood flow away from the brain, too, when you're angry.
But, you know, Joanna Macy always talks about these open systems. I mean, when the neurons are open, all the energy flows through the system, through the synapses. But boundaries and borders close everything up, and the system shuts down. The energy isn't flowing through. But if you don't like the word, I find to settle on open-heartedness and open-mindedness. Openness. We could just say openness. That works better for it.
You could even throw grounded in there.
I think I've said enough. I'm just going to ask you all to just sit for just a second or two, and I'm going to ring the bell again and listen to the... Stay concentrated on the sound of the bell until it completely disappears. Amen. Swaha. Thank you.
Want me to close and dance? Let's have a closing dance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.